The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew topped with a velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. And that imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. Participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.
They're sharpshooters. They're sharp soldiers. They're sharp dressers.
I didn't know we did all this.
They're the Apple Dumpling Gang.
We'll take this town like Grant took Richmond.
Watch them swing into action and blaze a trail through the West. Don Knotts and Tim Conway star when the Apple Dumpling Gang rides again on the magical world of Disney.
Welcome one and all to yet another episode of Escape from Vault Disney, the podcast where we review movies, TV shows, and short films available on the Disney Plus streaming service, chosen completely at random. I am your host, Tony Goldmark. Joining us today via Zoom, all the way from Burbank, California, Kaylin Saucedo.
Hi.
And Josh Saucedo.
Hello, everybody.
And joining us for the very first time on Escape from Vault Disney, all the way from Minneapolis, Minnesota, he practically needs no introduction. You know him from such long-running web series as History of Power Rangers, Long Box of the Damned, and of course, Atop the Fourth Wall, where bad comics burn. You know him from Atop the Fourth Wall, the movie. You know him from the audio drama A Voice in the Dark. And most of all, you know him as Fat Grandma. Ladies and gentlemen, Linkara himself, Lewis Lovehog!
I am looking at the suggested things for today's entry. I was like, man, I would have rather covered that. Man, I saw that when I was a kid. I'd love to see that again.
Well, what we are covering today is a little Disney classic called The Apple Dumpling Gang Rides Again, the 1979 sequel to the classic 1975 Disney comedy western The Apple Dumpling Gang.
Is it going to be a problem that I have not seen either one of these?
No, it's not going to be a problem, trust me.
That's not a problem? Okay.
Josh, I understand you've actually seen this movie.
Yes, I remember more than a few times back in the day, Disney Channel would run these two back to back. Admittedly, I've seen the first one more times than I have the second one, so it's going to be interesting going back over this one because I think there was a specific reason for that. Like, I had a preference for the first, so going to see why it is I don't remember this one as well.
The Apple Dumpling Gang is a pretty big blind spot in my Disney knowledge. I, too, have never seen either movie. Lewis, have you ever seen either of these?
I saw the first movie as a kid. I want to say they were based off of a book, and I read that, too. It was either elementary or middle school. I recall vaguely the plot concept of why they're called the Apple Dumpling Gang. Although, given the description of the sequel, it looks like the actual Apple Dumpling Gang isn't actually in the movie. Unless I'm wrong here. Basically, the plot of the first movie was like a couple of bumbling criminals run across some kids, and the kids help them, and they declare that, yeah, we're the something-something gang, and you're the Apple Dumpling Gang.
Man, we could have been watching the something-something gang.
The kids are the Apple Dumpling Gang, so from this description, it doesn't look like the Apple Dumpling Gang is in this.
Is this some kind of a turf war? What is this?
It's more of a misnomer than anything else.
Okay.
It's a war among transphobes, yes. That's what it is.
Yikes.
The suggestions here, the sign of Zorro would be cool, the story of Robin Hood, Herbie goes to Monte Carlo,
man. This is, of course, one of many, many Disney movies of this era in the 1970s to star Don Knotts and or Tim Conway. In fact, both of them are the titular Apple Dumpling Gang.
Oh, this is one of the Don Knotts ones?
Yes, this is a Don Knotts one.
Apple Dumpling Gang might arguably be considered the Don Knotts franchise. It's one of the big things that he's known for. I mean, this was the era in Disney history that I like to call the What Would Walt Have Done era. It was the era after Walt had died in 1966, but before Michael Eisner and Jeffrey Katzenberg and those guys took over the company in 1984. And during that period of almost 20 years, basically a bunch of Walt's former Yes Men were running the studio, and they didn't have a lot of creativity on their own. They always just deferred to whatever Walt wanted to do. So now they were left without Walt, and they just kept asking themselves, well, what would Walt have done? What would Walt have done? And Walt loved really goofy slapstick comedies like this, so in the 70s they put out a lot of really goofy-ass slapstick comedies.
It's the era where you can ask the question, what was Don Knotts not doing that weekend?
Exactly. I mean, you know, this was the 1970s. This was the decade of the new Hollywood movement, when all of Hollywood was being transformed by the likes of Scorsese and Robert Altman and the film school brats like Coppola and Spielberg and George Lucas. And you had stuff like Taxi Driver and The Godfather and Star Wars and Jaws, and cinema was changing before everyone's very eyes. And at Disney, they were all just stuck in the 50s and 60s and going, nope, Apple Dumpling Gang rides again. That's all we're putting out.
I know there's so much cinema veritas going on, but no, I really want to see what it's like when Don Knotts coaches a donkey to football victory.
Yes.
I need to see that story on the big screen.
Ah, Gus, you gotta love Gus. I mean, this past March, we had Muppet Month on Escape from Walt Disney, which ultimately won the Twitter poll. But a very close second was What Would Walt Have Done Month.
Mm-hmm. This is our follow-up to that.
Yeah, exactly.
You're gonna have to do that at some point.
This week is for all the What Would Walt Have Done Month stands who are really disappointed that it lost to Muppet Month.
The thing you can say about the first one is it has the Incredible Hulk.
Lou Ferrigno?
Is Lou Ferrigno in it?
Bill Bixby. The first one has
Bill Bixby. Okay.
Banner. It has Banner in it.
They're technically the same person.
Well, just from the cast list here on Disney Plus, I'm noticing this sequel has Tim Matheson in it and Kenneth Mars.
And Jack Elam.
Who's Jack Elam?
Jack Elam was a character actor, did a somewhat memorable performance on The Twilight Zone.
Oh.
In Will the Real Martian Please Stand Up as the crazy old kook.
She's just like a science fiction, that's what she is. A regular Ray Bradbury. Six humans and one monster from outer space.
He was in another memorable MST3K episode, The Girl in Lover's Lane, where he plays like a creepy guy who admires a girl, but some drifters come to town and the drifters are our heroes. Girl falls in love with one of the drifters. He rejects her at first, then Jack Elam murders her because he's an asshole.
Ooh.
But there's a behind the scenes story about that where Jack Elam was such a sweet, nice guy that anytime he tried to be menacing, the girl just started bursting into laughter.
Oh man.
And he's just like, you gotta stay serious. And that just made her laugh harder.
Got Ruth Buzzy in this. She was great on Laughing.
Kenneth Mars, of course, was Franz Liebkin in The Producers and The Constable in Young Frankenstein. Mm. Great character actor. I mean, we talked about this a few months ago when we covered The Cat from Outer Space on this podcast from around the same time period. Disney employed a lot of really good character actors who were a little past their prime, to put it charitably, but still really great talents who weren't really getting much of a chance to shine from the rest of Hollywood. I mean, I don't want to say Disney was the proto-Tarantino, so I won't.
Growing up, a lot of the time, my sibling and I, we were watched by my grandmother, and there were two things that were constantly on in the house, and that was Andy Griffith and the Carol Burnett Show. So I'm very familiar with Don Knotts just constantly hearing it, Andy, all through the house. And then just remembering Tim Conway cracking up Harvey Korman so hard during that dentist sketch. Like, I go back and watch that a couple times a year. That thing is comedy gold.
Novocaine. Here we are. Novocaine. Take a firm hold of the hypodermic needle. Right. There'll be a little bit of pain, and then numbness will set in.
So, will Apple Dumpling Gang Rides Again hold a candle to that kind of comedic appeal?
I can only hope my nostalgia will kick in, and it will make up for anything that time has been unkind to with this movie.
And the one other thing I really know about the Apple Dumpling Gang as a franchise was that it was the subject of a very memorable Paul F. Tompkins stand-up bit, where he talked about coming home from the bar late at night at like 3 a.m. and turning on the TV, and the Apple Dumpling Gang is on. Like, who's watching the Apple Dumpling Gang at 3 a.m.? But it made him imagine, like, what if somewhere there's a divorced dad who's got the kids for the weekend, and it is not going well, and he's just up all night drinking whiskey.
And that movie comes on. Get up! Get up! The Apple Dumpling Gang is on. Come on. We're going to watch it as a family.
I just expect it to be an identical experience to every Disney film of that time period. I have zero higher expectations than that.
I'm expecting a lot of slapstick, and I'm expecting a lot of Don Knotts does something stupid, and Tim Conway has to be angry at him.
We will be right back with our thoughts on the 1979 Disney classic, The Apple Dumpling Gang Rides Again, right here on Escape from Vault Disney.
And now it's time for State of the Parks with Tony Goldmark.
Muppets Haunted Mansion. What more can I say? What more is there to say that isn't summed up in those three most glorious words in the English language? Muppets Haunted Mansion. It sounds the way ice cream tastes. It sounds too good to be true, and yet it miraculously is. On Friday, it was announced that this fall, Disney Plus will be airing the first ever Muppets Halloween special, not counting the Muppet Show episodes with Vincent Price or Alice Cooper, in which Gonzo is challenged to spend Halloween night at the infamous, world-famous Haunted Mansion. There's much that isn't yet known about this special, though I'm guessing it's not the same Haunted Mansion movie project in development with screenwriter Katie Dippold and director Justin Simien attached, though it'd be neat if it was, and it has not yet been revealed which Haunted Mansion Gonzo has to spend the night in, the one in California, the one in Florida, or maybe even one from an overseas park. But the press release did promise celebrity cameos and all new music, and why am I even still talking? It's Muppets Haunted Mansion, for God's sake! Guillermo del Who? We've got Muppets Haunted Mansion happening! Just hook it to my veins! And now, back to the podcast about something other than Muppets Haunted Mansion, I guess. Whatever.
Come on home. See what's waiting for you.
Okay, we just watched The Apple Dumpling Gang Rides Again. That was surprisingly boring.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Okay.
Now I remember very why glad, I don't remember.
Very glad it's not just me. I feel like a lot of movies of that ilk out of Disney, that kind of comedy, there's an ebb and a flow, and it has a particular pace to it. It follows a particular narrative just fine, even for being all over the place the way that Disney slapstick comedies tend to be.
Right.
But this is just kind of all over the place in a different way that just has no pacing, no flow that makes me want to pay attention.
It's so slapdash. It feels like just a series of stuff that happens to these two guys. Sometimes not even to these two guys.
Yeah.
Sometimes it goes into a fucking rapey subplot where it's like fucking Taming of the Shrew or some shit.
Yeah, that relationship, quote unquote, relationship,
yeah,
bugged me quite a bit.
I mean, we'll talk about that, definitely. Mm. But do we even want to try to recount what the plot of this thing was?
I can very briefly do so. Don Knotts and Tim Conway come to town wanting to go legit. Hijinks ensue that make people think they're bank robbers.
Right.
They get chased to a fort, are forcibly conscripted, then because of wacky hijinks are then sent to prison.
But then it turns out the prison has like a secret chamber where the bad guys are plotting a train robbery, and then
yeah,
everything collides at the train it's just...
They get a part in the end.
It's Harold and Kumar minus the whimsy.
Yeah! This movie is just a loosely connected series of vignettes. Like, the movie keeps getting bored and keeps inventing new stuff to happen to these guys. Like, it's the Apple Dumpling Gang tries to go straight, and then the Apple Dumpling Gang joins the cavalry, and then the Apple Dumpling Gang goes to jail. It's like they slammed four or five Ernest movies together and just
yep,
called it a yep, fucking movie.
It doesn't help that at the very beginning, at the outset of the movie, we get a one-sentence summary from Tim Conway of everything that happened in the last movie,
right,
and then they don't reference it again until the end of the movie.
It's not even a summary, it's why we're not with the family anymore doing our own thing, which is basically, we didn't want to be farmers.
Yeah, this whole movie is fucking pointless, because at the beginning, they've left Dusty Donovan and the kids, as they call them, to go try to be legit and not have to be farmers the rest of their lives. Then at the end of the movie, they're on their way back to the farm to be farmers.
To be fair, after all of that, I kind of understand, you know, maybe we should just go back to the damn farm because this is not working.
Yeah, but they're at the exact same point at the end of this movie that they were at the end of the first movie.
Yeah.
Nothing was actually accomplished. It was just a bunch of stuff happening. And you know what? I can forgive a really all-over-the-place plot. I can forgive that it doesn't really go anywhere if this was funnier.
Yeah.
Right,
and
right.
It isn't.
The real cardinal sin of this movie is it's not that funny.
I got a few chuckles here and there.
Yeah.
The two that immediately come to mind is, blow it out your ears, sheep lover! And Don Knotts' gun falling apart during the inspection, but that was pretty much it.
I know this movie is supposed to be absurd, but there's nothing believable about this.
Yeah.
It's a completely absurd movie, but none of it is absurd in a fun way.
It's less absurd and more just stupid.
Yeah.
It's just dumb.
Earlier this year on the podcast, we covered The Cat from Outer Space, which was released the previous year, 1978, and which was also dumb as dog shit, or cat shit rather, but in a fun way. And I actually ended up giving that a Disney Plus just because it was so enjoyably stupid. This wasn't. This was just stupid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
It didn't go far enough. It didn't go bonkers enough. Because if you removed the scant moments when Tim Conway says something stupid, or Don Knotts reacts to the stupid thing Tim Conway did with, oh, you fucking idiot. Otherwise, this is kind of just a straight Western movie. There's nothing else funny going on around these two guys. In good comedies, either it's not just the one main guy or the two main guys being funny, it's everyone else in the cast being funny as well, or if it is just the main one guy or two guys in the cast being funny, they're in it way more than the Apple Dumpling Gang was in this.
Where's this B plot going over here? Wait, who are we supposed to care about?
This movie answers the question, what if a Mel Brooks movie wasn't about anything?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I must admit that from all the descriptions, it wasn't coming across to me that this was taking place in the 1800s. Mm. And so when I realized that was what was going on, I was like, oh, that's where we are.
Yeah, it's a Western.
One thing that really took me out of the movie isn't quite right because nothing put me in the movie in the first place. But them being all Western, they were using Western terminology and vernacular and grammar and stuff, but nobody really spoke in a Western accent.
Not really, like, no.
Hollywood, well, you people have to remember, saying by this Western words.
By this point, Don Knotts can say whatever the hell he wants to. He's just grandfathered in with having heard Andy Griffith's accent next to him.
Right.
So you just automatically assume it's Southern.
I can't do that. No, I mean,
then
like,
you didn't sit through nearly as much Andy Griffith show as I did.
Josh, I grew up you lived in Texas too, but I was in the hill country growing up. I lived out there in them there parts.
Yeah,
I
but how I often couldn't. Did you watch the Andy Griffith show?
Oh, no.
Daily.
No.
Is what I'm telling you.
No.
Well, Barn, we're going to have to go check this out. Well, Andy! I'm used to that voice in my head so clearly.
But you make a good point. Almost no one had a drawl in this movie. It was all just these Californian actors speaking in their normal voices.
Right.
Even fucking Kenneth Mars, who's great at accents, wasn't really doing that much of an accent in this movie. Although I will say, I did love the way he pronounced carcasses as car cases.
I shall have their carcasses back in this town in 2 weeks.
I repeated it out loud immediately
also,
after he said it.
We both remarked
car cases.
When he knocks out the guys that are having the bar fight during his introduction, that is the most limp-wristed cold cock I've ever seen. Not with the butt of the gun, but with the barrels.
Yes.
Seeing him strut around and being cool and having the guns and everything, I just kept thinking, man, I wish I was watching Tombstone.
Yeah.
I was like injecting Tombstone lines into this, just like him coming into the fort, I'm your Huckleberry.
Do we actually know it was Kenneth Mars, or did David Harbour go back in time and try really hard to be a goofy sheriff?
Well, speaking of people going back in time, is it me, or did the woman look distractingly exactly like Catherine Zeta-Jones?
Yes!
She did!
It looks like Catherine Zeta-Jones went back in time 20 years and was cast in that movie. It's uncanny.
She went back in time, and David Harbour went back in time and did his best Frankenstein kaiju impersonation back when we used to visit Six Flags Fiesta Texas, and they would have people in character walking around, what was it, Crack Axle Canyon, trying
the
to be
western part of
the western part of the park.
Yeah.
Like, I work at a theme park. That's the vibe he gave off.
Yeah, it makes me think of, what is Place with Snoopy stuff. Knott's Berry Farm.
Yeah.
Place with Snoopy
Ghost stuff. Town Alive, right.
Yeah, it just felt like you walked through Knott's Berry Farm and here's the old Western guy. And why don't you come and get a picture with me?
One of my good friends, Chris Nebergall, is one of those old Western guys at Knott's Berry Farm. That's his job. And I've been to Knott's Berry Farm, Ghost Town Alive. Everyone at Ghost Town Alive committed better than the actors in this movie did.
Again, I haven't watched the first movie since I was a little kid. But man, I was really surprised that Don Knotts was not the idiot in this group.
Yeah.
That he was the straight man.
No, because that job falls way easier to Tim Conway, and you see him just slip into it. There's no problem with Tim Conway being the funny man, because more often than not on Carol Burnett, he would be the funny man, and everybody else around him would be the straight man.
I get you.
He's the funny dentist, and Harvey Korman, usually in that show, he was cast as the straight man next to him. So it's funny watching that parallel there. But in this particular context, especially going back to Andy Griffith, when you're used to Don Knotts being the comic relief to Andy being the straight man.
Yeah, exactly.
Don Knotts here's the straight man.
He's the angry guy who gets angry at Tim Conway for being an idiot.
And he just comes off as grumpy, and he's not moving the plot forward.
That's not a fun way to look at Don Knotts. Don Knotts doesn't work as the Mo of a comedy team.
Yeah,
he doesn't.
I don't think he was terrible at it, but for me, he kept doing the thing like, let me speak. I can handle this better. But then, like, we never see him talking his way out of any situation. He doesn't, like, exemplify any reason why he should be the one talking.
Right.
At the beginning, he's dressed like Willy Wonka, but as a pimp.
I wrote that down, too. Don Knotts is Willy Wonka.
One rare bright spot in this movie, I thought she was out of place, but I did kind of love Ruth Buzzi's sheer exuberance.
Yes.
She was one of the only people in this movie showing any enthusiasm whatsoever, and I appreciated that.
I want to have as much love for life as this old lady.
Yes.
Just getting her kicks out of the sheriff dude, getting it handed to him.
Woolly had to drop on them, and they still outgunned them. They's faster and scalded cats him, too.
Went that way, stupid.
It's very much the same in another movie, the North Avenue Irregulars. When she shows up in that, she's just a breath of fresh air.
Right.
It's funny, but it's still kind of serious. And then she shows up seeming serious and then becomes more invested in the caper that they've got going on there.
Right.
And she's very good at that.
Harry Morgan is also in this movie, and he was in a lot of Disney movies around this era. He was also in the first Apple Dumpling Gang playing a completely different character.
Exactly. Huh. You guys were just going to completely ignore that?
Okay, yeah.
Gotcha.
It's like David Cross in the first two Men in Black movies. But he was also in The Cat from Outer Space, basically playing the same role he plays here of the stern, uptight military guy who's the no-nonsense authority figure. And again, he's doing the same goddamn voice. He's not attempting a drawl either.
Even if I could explain to Washington what happened, they'd never understand.
But he's trying his best to act. He's trying.
Harry Morgan's a great actor. Dragnet, MASH.
Oh, yeah.
Just, he doesn't really have variation. He knows how to play his part and deliver his lines well, but he's not going to try to put on an affectation or something.
Thank you for telling me who Jack Elam is, because, yeah, he is legitimately great in this movie, and he's one of those, oh, that guy actors.
Oh, yeah. Him playing Big Mac.
Yeah.
Big Mac, yeah. He's the perfect grizzly tough guy in this.
Where is this crispy chicken sandwich?
The one big sequence that did actually get some laughs out of me was the one where they're trying to put the money back in the bank by those ropes, and the timing is thrown off, and Don Knotts ends up swinging on the rope into the bank with it, and they play the Man on the Flying Trapeze over the soundtrack. It's big, broad, comical stuff, but at least there, okay, this is the kind of slapstick sequence you'd see in an old Harold Lloyd movie, or a Buster Keaton movie, or a Chaplin movie. That's the sort of thing they're invoking here, and I could respect it on that level. But that's the only scene in the movie that goes that far with it.
I wrote down in my notes for that scene, it was the opening to The Dark Knight, but in 240.
Right.
And in reverse.
The Apple Dumpling Gang does not even push forward a lot of the slapstick. The slapstick just kind of happens around them because of their mule or something. Their mule pushes forth a lot more of the problems.
I felt so bad for that mule sometimes. The opening of that movie, going downhill with two dudes on its back, I was just like,
the mule is, they're telling you up front, the mule is literally carrying this movie.
Right.
Sudden total shift as we see the wagon on fire. The Apple Dumpling Gang strikes again.
Knotts and Conway are so passive in this movie. Like, they barely do anything. Again, stuff just kind of happens to them. Like, they're trying to get their picture taken and, oop, the mule wanders into the photography studio and messes everything up.
Antics! That was the first moment I was like, look! Antics!
Antics! It's the antics happening. I feel like that early bank scene where they get robbed and then confused for the robbers could have been so much funnier than it was. Because the idea of bank robbers pretending to be the tellers and they're inadvertently giving away their money to them when they think they're depositing it. Like, there's stuff to mine there, but instead they just waste half the scene on that stupid business with the plant.
Right! The plant! I said out loud, why is he doing that?
Yeah.
Why did he decide this was important? And I realize it's to be dumb and silly and slapstick, like that's
See,
what
that
we do,
to me
but...
speaks more to like the Carol Burnett sensibility of if Tim's just doing business with a prop, it works a lot better when you've got a live audience and they're reacting to him fumbling around with the plant and trying to put it back together.
Right,
but when you're cutting
right.
to him, cutting away and then cutting back and there's no reaction, it doesn't work.
They just wrote a basic Old West script and they're like,
yeah.
Okay, well, we'll just have Don Knotts and Tim Conway stumble with a plant for 3 minutes, and then that'll be where the laughs come from in this scene. It was so lazy.
It's not even a very compelling plot.
No,
I figured out that Ravencroft was the villain as soon as Harry Morgan declared,
I am being relieved of my position here. 2 weeks from today, Lieutenant Ravencroft will be promoted and will assume command of the post.
Oh, okay. If they're not sending someone else to deal with this situation, then clearly Ravencroft did this so he could get control of the fort.
By the way, do you think that was a reference to voice actor Thurl Ravenscroft?
Oh.
I could not say.
Thurl Ravenscroft, the voice of Tony the Tiger, among others.
But first, we'll start with a complete breakfast, including my vitamin-packed Frosted Flakes. They bring out the tiger in you.
Did a lot of voices for Disney, especially around this era.
I doubt it. This movie was not great.
Oh, my God.
So anyway, Ravencroft is engaged to Harry Morgan's daughter, and they're going to announce their engagement at this big party at the fort, where he straight up says,
it's going to be quite an evening, isn't it? I want everything to go perfectly.
Oh, that's my cue.
Light everything on fire.
Let's keep assigning the people known for screwing things up to screw things up.
And of course, they fuck up with the punch bowl and the cake goes flying into Kenneth Mars's face. And you think that's just going to be the beginning of this big wacky slapstick scene.
Giant food fight.
But then the place it goes is, oh, fire. Suddenly a gritty fucking disaster movie.
Like, I thought we were going to have the food fight at the end of Blazing Saddles and then we got the Towering Inferno.
I did get another laugh. Better get that punch bowl on the table or the cook's gonna be mad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As they're watching in horror as the whole fort goes down in flames.
You guys burned down F Troop.
I mean, I get that ostensibly it's supposed to be a laugh that, oh, these wacky idiots set the whole fort on fire with their shenanigans. That fire was fucking intense.
Yeah.
It was filmed like Backdraft.
Like the explosion, like they spent a really good chunk of the movie being like, man, we really want you to appreciate the size of this fire.
They let people go and stand in the fire, step on the fire.
The major yells, clear the area! And then he and his daughter run towards the fire?
They had nowhere else to go for staging, so they just went back towards the fire.
While Don Knotts is pulling a Wile E. Coyote with the powder keg.
Why would you assign them anything at this point? Just the best thing they could do is stand still. The most secure is when they were tied to the wheels. And I actually kind of felt good about that. Because at least they're not going to ruin anyone else's lives.
These guys have rolled in on a wagon, drunk off of their asses. We're going to put them in the military immediately.
Right.
And we're going to expect them to know how to do shit. Like, put together a gun. Then we're going to make sure that they're on restaurant duty. And they fucked that up.
Yeah, I mean, this is on you guys for even conscripting these idiots.
Also, are we going to overlook that the dude's name is written in the script as Sergeant Slaughter?
Yeah! Sergeant Slaughter, that one. Guy, yeah. I loved him.
Sergeant Slaughter versus the Apple Dumpling Gang this Sunday at WrestleMania.
Here's what I do not get. This was during a time period where, yes, you could be forcibly conscripted like this. It's why there was a problem with deserters and whatnot.
Right.
So, why in God's name were they sent to prison and not executed? Why did no one put a bullet between their eyes?
Because then the movie would be over, I guess.
I know, but still.
I mean, Kenneth Mars tried. As soon as you see them tied to those wheels, you just know, okay, the wheels are going to spin. The wheels are going to spin with them around it. And he spins them and tries to shoot them as a challenge to himself, I guess.
So let's talk about the romance.
Oh, good God.
So she's an asshole to him.
Harry Morgan's daughter, who looks like Catherine Zeta-Jones, she's introduced in the first act as basically this Old West Karen.
Yep.
So she's Karen Zeta-Jones, basically. She's just bitching about, they sent an enlisted man to pick me up. I was told there'd be an officer. I'm the general's daughter. You don't treat me like this.
Do you know who I am?
Do you know who my father is? That whole fucking thing. And then Tim Matheson fucking kidnaps her in the second act.
Tim Matheson with a very noticeable porn stash.
Yes.
That mustache.
Tim Mustacheson.
This was Tim Matheson's audition for Animal House. I get that.
Animal House was a year earlier than this.
Was
it? He'd already done Animal House by this
good
point.
Good God.
And then forces her to do manual labor at the House of Martha is apparently her name.
Why did you say that name?
Exactly. There you go.
Why did anyone say that name?
Also, Martha's blind, right?
Yeah, is she blind?
Is that what it was?
It looked like she was blind and they didn't want to explicitly say it.
She keeps looking away from people when she talks to them. It's like she's reading off cue cards and they're not good at hiding it.
I always just thought she was rude and didn't look anybody in the face.
I don't think she ever once looked at the characters. She's just staring off into space the whole time. Is it because she was blind? Is that what they were implying there?
Either she's blind or she's that much of a classically trained stage actress and then just can't do it.
But wait, doesn't she specifically say, like, oh, he's in love with you. I can tell by the way he looks at you or something.
No, the way he says your name. Maybe they were trying to imply she was blind without actually saying it or giving her, like, false contact lenses or something.
Right.
She says, oh, well, he's in love with you. And the woman who's been fucking kidnapped starts getting all
squishy,
flustered and giggly. Oh, you really think so?
Oh, my kidnapper's in love with me. Ooh, I've got the vapors.
I've hated it all up until this moment, but now suddenly I feel differently about it.
And the blind woman says, you're a lucky girl. She's got Stockholm syndrome, lady.
He's had, like, three conversations with you, all of them where you hate him.
Right.
Extreme abuse at him, despite him saving your life.
But he's also being an abusive jackass.
Yeah. To be fair, though, that was a good tackle when he saved her. That was at least first down.
That was a pretty good tackle, yeah.
I mean, sorry about your dress, but
yeah,
at least we're in field goal range.
I don't know how there was that much mud right there and nowhere else. It was amazing. Beautiful mud. Amazing mud.
The mud.
The mud.
Props on the mud in this movie.
Did she only have two dresses? She had, like, had the fancy one she came out on, realized it was a bit too hot, so she changed into something lighter.
Well, I think she was angry because she had just bought that new dress. She just paid for it and it already got ruined.
Eventually, she leaves her kidnapper and comes back, but it's been like a couple days, and nobody, when she gets back, is like, oh, well, there you are. Where have you been? We were worried about you.
Yeah, she just shows up.
There's a scene missing. I was expecting them to turn around like, oh my God, Millie, you're back.
Can you tell us where he took you? Can you give us more information?
Nobody asked where she was when she left in the first place. When Dudeface got thrown off the carriage by kidnapper, he wasn't like, hey, so your daughter just was carried off by this other dude. Maybe you should be worried about that.
Yeah.
That didn't happen at all, and I was just like, why?
We want to send someone out to look for her. We've already got four patrols out, can't look for her, oh well. And then, during the train job, when he reveals that he's actually from military intelligence investigating all this.
Right.
Look, we gotta keep you safe before I get married to you. And she's just like, oh, married?
Married, yeah.
You're already engaged to Ravencroft and you don't know he's the bad guy yet.
And you know what's really fucking sad? Her suddenly realizing, oh, I do want to marry the man who fucking kidnapped me. That's literally the closest anyone in this movie has to an arc.
Yeah.
Yep.
She's the only character who changes at all. And I don't even think that whole kidnapping subplot was okay anymore in 79. Speaking of not okay anymore, can we talk about those indigenous people at the end?
Oh, man, we were going to have to get there eventually. I don't think a number of them were indigenous. I don't think so.
They were definitely played by white dudes. Not even in red face.
Yeah.
It didn't even look like they had any makeup on.
They had such a small part in the story, and their part is based off of something that happened off screen.
Right.
Two scenes previous, the half explanation is you suddenly see Tim Conway and Don Knotts in those blankets.
Right.
And then we get the explanation later on, oh, they traded the mule for the blankets, and the mule ran off.
That's why the native people chased the train, because the white people cheated us because their mule ran away. How is that their fault?
Blaming the white people for cheating with blankets, I'm like, no, that tracks.
No, I mean, that is fair, but still, the mule ran away from you guys.
Yeah, it seemed like overkill to stop a train and start firing arrows through the windows over two blankets. No matter how much pop culture has told us, haha, we're gonna get one over on these guys who don't know anything about actual trade or the value of anything, haha.
Right.
I don't think they were that dumb to feel that these two blankets were gonna be worth the halting of a train in
plus
a violent
all the
manner.
Ammunition they're wasting.
Yeah,
just
right?
to get like, the blankets back.
They knew about the train job. They were going to be recruited to be a part of it. Why did they try to leave by this train? Why did they not wait until night?
Because they're fucking idiots. None of this movie operates by rhyme or reason, which again would be forgivable if it was funnier, but it's not.
Stupidity, when you use it as a plot device, has to be written smartly.
Exactly.
Otherwise, it's just stupid.
And again, like half the time, it's not even their fault.
No, just crap happens.
What's it say about a movie when peeling a frowny face into a potato is honestly one of the best laughs?
That was, I laughed. Yeah. I legit laughed.
It was cute. It was a potato with a frowny face. It's like, that's the level
unbelievable
of comedy in this movie.
It's also the level of misery we all felt.
Right.
Why are we here?
I imagine that had to have been an ad lib. Like, all right, we need you guys to be peeling the potatoes. Action. And then Tim's like, I'm going to peel a frowny face. This is terrible so far. I got to give the audience something. Here, take a look at this.
That potato was the best actor in the movie.
Why does Don Knotts even hang out with Tim Conway? He doesn't seem to like him that much.
No.
He hates him.
You really get the impression that they only hang out with each other because no one else will, and otherwise they'd be completely alone in the universe.
I'm going to issue a correction for us because I decided to check this real quick. The lead Native American was actually a Native American actor.
Good.
Oh, okay.
Okay, good.
Nicholas Ramos.
I thought some of them might have been, but I saw like dudes in the background that I was like, eh, not you.
It's easy for us to believe they're not because let's face it, it's all too common, especially for low budget Disney children's sequels, for them not to have native actors.
Right.
I'm a writer, Mr. Geisler. Ted Oakham said I should drop by this morning to see about
Ted Arack.
Huh? No, I'm a...
I need Indians for a Norman Steel Western.
I'm a writer. Ted Oakham...
Think about that thing. Writers come and go. We always need Indians.
Every time Conway or Knotts picks up a gun, they suddenly go from having the worst luck in the world to the best dumb luck in the world. Like in the bank, they accidentally drop their guns and the bullets ricochet and shoot Kenneth Mars in the hand.
Perfectly.
Or in the secret cavernous Bond villain lair at the end when they accidentally shoot Jack Elam's cigar.
I will give it this. I actually thought that Big Mac's plan was actually pretty clever. The idea of, well, this prison was built by military prisoners,
right,
and they found this cave system underground. We decided, why would we want to just live on the run everywhere when instead we can use it as a secret base, leave to go commit crimes, then live like kings right here? That's actually kind of clever.
Yeah, but they're still kind of on the run whenever they leave the prison.
True, but no one's going to be looking for them at the prison.
I guess,
where would
but...
you not look for criminals that are on the run? The place where you're trying to put them.
Yeah, I guess so.
Unfortunately, that's the most clever part of this movie.
Is there even any point in asking what the fuck they were trying to accomplish by dressing up as saloon girls?
Yeah,
what
were they
trying
doing?
To leave out the bag.
Obviously, they were trying to get away. Why did they dress up like this if they weren't anticipating the need to go out on stage and dance?
Right.
Exactly.
By the way, Back to the Future Part 3 stole a joke from this movie.
Where's the back door?
In the back.
Listen, you got a back door to this place?
Yeah, it's in the back.
They're trying to find the back door, and instead they just go to the dressing room, and they think, well, I guess we'll change into these outfits.
And put on makeup on top of that. Like, they went the whole mile.
They put on lipstick!
Yeah.
That might have been a little funny, like, you need to hand me the rouge. I'm trying to hide my face.
But why? Why were they doing this?
Instead, it just cuts to them wandering onto the stage in these fucking saloon girl outfits, and then they have to fucking dance.
And be catcalled and harassed.
And no one can tell it's them, because it's fucking Wild Wild West logic, I guess. And the fucking donkey keeps showing up.
The donkey, golly. That donkey just loves that man so much.
That donkey is so loyal.
He's just his best friend.
I realize the joke is that Conway and Knotts aren't really doing anything. They're just these victims of circumstance that things keep happening to. but they're such passive characters that it's hard to even care about them.
They're barely involved in the finale. They just suddenly decide, oh no, the natives are coming back to us to try to get their blankets back. Let's go hang out with the train robbers. Oh no, we're turning on the train robbers. Yeah, we were totally on the side of law and order. Don't arrest us.
One movie this movie reminded me a lot of, the second episode of this podcast over a year ago, was on a really terrible 90s Disney movie called Meet the Deedles.
Oh,
now,
God.
This was not as bad as Meet the Deedles. I'll give it that much. The acting in this in particular was much better. But it did feel like a similar perfunctory stuff just happens because it happens vibe. And every plot inconsistency can just be written off as, oh, well, these people are idiots. But they're not charmingly idiots, you know? They're just kind of obnoxiously idiots.
That cinematography, you were mentioning this, Tony, at the beginning of all this, how while other things were happening cinematically within Hollywood at around that time period and things were getting experimental, it just felt like the shots had not aged since like 1962. They were just doing the same thing.
Right off the bat, it felt like a TV movie.
Yeah.
The Disney aesthetic was just stuck decades earlier. They weren't moving forward with it. I mean, for most of the 70s, the Disney executives' rationale was, well, sure, Hollywood is evolving and changing all around us, but that's for adult movies. We're still the number one game in town for family movies. When parents want to take their kids to see a nice, clean, wholesome, G-rated family movie, they take them to see Disney movies. That's the niche we're filling. And then in 1977, of course, a little film called Star Wars comes out, and the Disney execs realize, well, shit, we need to up our game. Okay, let's make The Black Hole, which came out later the same year as this movie. And
yeah, we could have watched The Black Hole.
Then the following year, they released another Herbie movie. So even at this point, they were like 1 foot tentatively in the future and several feet stuck in the past.
In terms of timing of when these ideas, if you take the basic concept of this movie and make it a year later with a different studio and with more focus on your comedic actors, you get stir crazy.
Yeah, pretty much.
I feel like Peter Sellers would have drastically redid a lot of the slapstick of this.
Peter Sellers in any role, replace Don Knotts, replace Tim Conway, hell, replace Kenneth Mars, and that would have been a way more interesting movie to watch.
I was just so shocked that this was 79?
79.
It's just only a handful of years before I was born and a movie looks like this?
Yep. This is the same year as freaking Richard Donner Superman.
Yeah.
Richard Donner Superman was a year earlier. That
oh,
was
no, no,
78.
You're right, 78.
This was the same year as Alien and Apocalypse Now and the first Star Trek movie. I mean, The Empire Strikes Back was only a year away, for God's sake.
Jesus.
And even as far as comedy, 1979 was the year of The Jerk and
The
Life
Jerk.
Of Brian.
Yeah,
and
The Jerk was cinematically extremely different.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, the cinematography.
Well, that's what happens when you have Carl Reiner at the helm.
Yeah.
And The Muppet Movie. The Muppet Movie came out in 79. That was the biggest kids movie of the year. Blew this shit right out of the water, and small wonder.
I was pretty on the verge of knocking out a couple of times, I'm not gonna lie. I was just so bewildered that it wasn't at least as up to par with other Disney films of its ilk of
or
its time
older.
Period or older.
Like, I've seen episodes of, like, The Rifleman or Gunsmoke or friggin' F-Troop that were more funny and well put together than this movie was.
The director of this was Vincent McAvity, who was in Disney's stable of directors at the time. He also directed Gus, the field goal kicking mule,
which is a better movie,
along with Herbie Goes to Monte Carlo and Herbie Goes Bananas.
We could have watched Herbie Goes to Monte Carlo.
And Million Dollar Duck.
I love Million Dollar Duck.
He directed a lot of movies like that in the What Would Walt Have Done era. And interestingly, another weird blip on his filmography, one of the few non-Disney projects he directed was the 1974 Wonder Woman TV movie with Kathy Lee Crosby.
Oh.
That was him as well. The one where Diana was inexplicably blonde.
Let me make love to you.
Why?
Because your eyes reach into
you misunderstood me. I didn't mean why should you want to. I meant, why should I?
I was kind of expecting things to tie together more, like maybe the Marshal has his moment of redemption in the end when he realizes that he's been chasing the wrong people or helps save the day and everyone's like, yay, he's great and awesome. No, he's just drunk and depressed in a bar. And then they're exonerated off screen.
Everything is suddenly wrapped up in a nice bow in the very last shot that lasts like 30 seconds.
Right.
Well, and then all that happened and I guess we're just gonna go back to the farm. I'm sure sure the kids are gonna love this story.
It's a very television ending. Like, yeah, everything will be back to normal next week.
Roll. Next week on Apple Dumpling Gang.
And as those credits roll, the time has come to answer that question that has baffled mankind and apple dumpling kind through the ages, namely, what's the attraction? As far as I'm aware, there has never been any official Apple Dumpling Gang representation at the Disney parks. But of course, now, for some ungodly reason, the Apple Dumpling Gang Rides Again is going to be the most watched title on Disney Plus, because I said so. So Disney is going to try to find some way to work it into the theme parks. How are they going to do that, Kaylin?
What's the name of the Runaway Mountain Roller Coaster?
Big Thunder Mountain Railroad?
Big Thunder Mountain Railroad. They're going to reskin it. They're going to put animatronic Don Knotts in there somewhere. They just retheme Big Thunder Mountain. Yeah.
By the way, this movie actually opened the same year as Big Thunder Mountain Railroad at Disneyland.
Oh, no kidding. They could have done
missed
it.
Missed opportunity.
They've, yeah, missed opportunity. Exactly.
Josh?
They're going to take It's a Small World and take away all of the children, and really all you're doing is watching an animatronic donkey and you're following it through the mountains excruciatingly slow for about 25 minutes.
Lewis.
I see something akin to Pirates or Haunted Mansion, just some kind of weird attraction where you're on a train or on a mule or a wagon or something like that as you go through the incredible journey of the Apple Dumpling Gang, going from one wacky situation to the next, and quick animatronics depicting the slapstick moments of it, like Don Knotts swinging across overhead
right
into the bank, or, oh no, they were burning down the fort.
Well, unfortunately, you're all wrong. What Disney is going to do is buy out Knott's Berry Farm and turn it into Don Knott's Berry Farm.
Oh!
Why did they miss
oh,
that?
God. Oh,
no. I was going to mention it, but I thought, nah, I'll save it for What's the Attraction.
Good play. Good play.
They're going to turn all of Ghost Town Alive into a recreation of this movie where you accidentally defeat the marshal at the bank, and you get sent to the cavalry, and then you get sent to prison. Just all day, you are consigned to go through the motions of this movie instead of actually riding any rides.
And at the end, I get to burn it all down.
And of course, they're going to work the train at Knott's Berry Farm into it, and the train robbers are going to be dressed up in blankets and also showgirl costumes for no reason.
Cool.
So, final verdict, folks. I probably don't even have to ask, but is the Apple Dumpling Gang Rides Again a Disney Plus or a Disney Minus? Lewis?
Disney Minus. I mean, it's not the worst thing in the world, but it's just not interesting enough to ever really watch again. Or even a first time, honestly.
Josh?
Disney Minus. I will gladly watch Stir Crazier Blazing Saddles again over this.
Kaylin?
What can I say that you guys didn't already say? Disney Minus, I don't really desire to see this again in the future for probably the rest of my life.
It is unanimous. The Apple Dumpling Gang Rides Again is a Disney Minus, very solidly. Like I said, I've never seen the original. Maybe the original is much better. Maybe it's even worse for all I know. But this really does feel like one of those perfunctory sequels that was only thrown together because the original made a decent amount of money, and Disney was really desperate for movies that made money around this time. They were not doing very well at the box office in the 70s, and they just needed something, and this ended up being something. And this was 4 years after the original, so I do also kind of get the feeling that maybe the spark was gone a little, and they just threw it together because the executives demanded it, and this is what happened, and it's not good. Does anyone have anything to plug?
I review comic books on the internet, and people seem to like that for some reason. You can look for me just by searching for Atop the Fourth Wall, or Linkara-Atop the Fourth Wall, all one word except for the dash, or go to atopthefourthwall.com. That's all I got.
So, I sometimes do video reviews and stuff nowadays over on youtube.com/MarsGirl, but more often than not, I am making somebody mad on the internet at twitter.com/MarsGirl. Be angry at me. Everybody else is.
I do a lot of writing over at the Tokusatsu Network, at the TokuNet. You can find the podcast for that over on Spotify, where I will be on every other episode talking about kaiju news, Super Sentai, Kamen Rider, things like that. And then you can follow me over on Twitter at Josh Knight first.
And as always, you can follow me on Twitter at Tony Goldmark, and you can also follow this show on Twitter at EFVD Podcast. I've also got a Facebook fan group you can join called Some Jerk with a Fan Club, and I've got a YouTube channel, youtube.com/Tony Goldmark, where you can find all three seasons of my web series, Some Jerk with a Camera, along with a bunch of other videos about movies and theme parks, and even a few scant episodes of this very podcast. You can find every episode of this podcast at PipeDreamPodcast.com, as well as all the usual outlets like Spotify, Audible, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play. If you like what you've been hearing and you'd like to help us out, please subscribe, please leave a review, please give us 5 stars. All that stuff helps us get discovered by the almighty algorithm. If you'd like to help us out even more, you can donate to my Patreon, patreon.com/TonyGoldmark, where if you pledge any amount, even the bare minimum of $1 a month, you get to hear episodes of this podcast one day early on Tuesdays instead of Wednesdays. Even on weeks when I don't quite have the episode finished by Tuesday, like this week, I always release either a finished segment or a work in progress of everything I've got so far, so my patrons always get something from me every Tuesday. Once again, that's patreon.com/TonyGoldmark. Special thanks to all my patrons. You don't know how much it means to me, especially in these financially uncertain times. And I am joined now by one of my guests on next week's episode. We mentioned him briefly earlier in this episode, Chris Nebergall. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing just swell.
Are you ready to read off the randomizer's pick for next week?
I surely am, Tony.
Okay, Smart House, initiate random shuffle mode, please.
Initiating random shuffle mode.
Make a selection.
And the winner is...
Go Figure from 2005.
Go Figure. Is that a Disney Channel original movie?
I've never heard of it before. Shall we Google it?
It does indeed look like a Disney Channel original movie. All right, join us next week on Escape from Vault Disney when we will cover the 2005 Disney Channel original movie, Go Figure.
Come on home where your video's playing. Good times are waiting, it's true. Come where your family is waiting for Walt Disney and you. Walt Disney and you. Walt Disney and you.
Your mom doesn't let you stay up this late, right? That's why Dad is number one.